Welcome back, Whiteboard Daily. Carl, we are coming off our first interview ever. That was pretty fun. What a great interview Dr. Sean was.
That was really awesome. I think my math, hopefully it serves me correctly, but I think that was number 10. And it'd be nice to have number 10 as with a, something special like that with an interview, and especially someone like Dr. Sean, who, you know, we talk about credibility and we talk about people who just know what they're talking about. And he is definitely a thought leader in our industry. And it was just a pleasure to sit down and talk to him.
It's been nice for me, like he mentioned in the podcast, I've known him over 10 years now. I visit him to work on my body in the past. But man, to see his just growth, you know, he's so obviously mature, but his growth as an entrepreneur, I was just so impressed with any question you hit him with.
Yeah.
He had it. Like that's what your business needs to be. That's what you and I are working on here. But he just, it's so impressive to see what he's created.
Yeah, it was very impressive. I'm so glad we were able to sit down with him. I've learned so much just from the courses that I've done with Active Life. Looking forward to doing more of those in the future. I love it how, I think most people who are going to know who he is are going to, or know about Active Life is probably through Instagram and social media. And the thing that I like about what they post is it's like blatant, honest things that you need to hear, especially if you're a coach, the cold hard truth. And many times people try to soften a message, but they are always just coming through very, hard and clear. And I like that. So, and I think we saw that in his personality, but not the cold part, but just like good, honest truth stuff.
Yeah, I agree. He's the perfect balance of like truthful and abrasive at the same time. Yeah. You know, he doesn't mince words, and that's something I really respect about.
Talking about mincing words, I think we're getting into a good segue for today's topic. And I sent that through to you. I'll go ahead and introduce what we're going to be talking about today. It's something that I feel very strongly about. And ironically, we're probably going to spend about 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes, talking about something that we should be doing less of, which is talking and using more words. So today's message, today's topic is going to be, let me just bring it up here. Same message, less words. The idea here is that you are using your words as a tool, and the less words that you use, you try to pare down what you're saying. What I'm saying here is this. I'm going to read the caption from the Instagram post that was posted on February 5th of last year. We should probably repost this sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, this is a drawing that you will be able to really improve. It's simple, don't get me wrong, but just seeing your recent posts that are just so crisp, it's amazing. Like, I love your new posts are like, it's like sunlight versus dark, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that. It's pretty cool when, you know, it's a leap to digital, and it's also just taking the skills that I've kind of developed over the past 2.5 years of drawing every single day, and it's starting to pay off. So it's pretty fun to see how far I've come whenever I go to redraw some stuff. So anyway, yeah, this is from last year, February, over a year and a half ago, February 5th, 2019. This was a coaching technique post. And the idea here is same message, less words. And the copy for this caption goes, coaches, we are communicators. In these two drawings, the same relative message is communicated. However, one uses far less lines. And the picture that we're talking about here is there's two drawings of a smiley face. And the one on the left it's kind of like
jagged.
Jagged, yeah. There's a lot of different lines there. I'm not sure how many. You can probably go count. There might be, they may have used 20 lines or so.
Yeah, a lot of lines.
To draw a smiley face. And on the drawing on the right-hand side, there's just four strokes there. You've got the circle, a dot for each eye, and then the smiley face. And the idea here is they're both smiley faces, but one uses far less strokes. And going back to the caption here, it says, imagine the lines of a drawing are like the words when we're coaching. Chuck Carswell reminds us that cues should be actionable, effective, and short. Of course, this skill takes a long time to develop, but don't lose your athlete with long, complex descriptions. Find ways to communicate the same message with less words. And another hashtag Chuck Carswell, because I think we've probably mentioned him almost every single episode that we've had so far, because he just drops so many gems.
He's a legend.
He is a legend.
Well, in fairness, I mean, you hear Chuck say this a lot, but this is really a message from the level one, the level two. You know, we talk about cues in the foundations of effective coaching in the first lecture of the level two seminar. And when we get to the cue portion in correcting, short, specific, and actionable.
Yeah.
And that's something I watch coaches. And, you know, there used to be a game. I'm a big nerd for music trivia. And there used to be a game show, and it would go something like they play, you know, you'd have to say, like, you and I would be against each other. I can guess this song in 8 seconds. And you would be like, I can guess it in 7. And my point when I watch coaches coach, I'm always like, you need to be able to get your point across in 3 words or less.
Yep.
And that's really what this message is about. And, you know, Chuck, like I said, Chuck repeats this all the time, but really where this is important is think about any Metcon.
Yeah.
You ever find yourself coaching someone and they slow down and look at you?
They're like, would you just let me, like, I got it. Okay. But I'm sucking wind here.
Well,
they probably don't understand half the words that are coming out of your mouth because there's no blood in their brain. And you're trying to recite to them the Gettysburg Address for all they know. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, there's the opposite of that, which is your newer athletes, or maybe your athletes that don't know any better, that just stop and they almost want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
But that's your responsibility, you know, not to interfere with their workout and
preserve the stimulus.
Right. I mean, if you're, hey, you know, on this thruster, I noticed you're pressing a little bit early. So what I want you to do is, you know, slow down, stand up, you know, press now. Like you're destroying their workout and people are there to move. A cue should remind them of something you've already taught them.
Yeah. It's almost like a cue is a verbal symbol of a longer description, right?
That's a great way to put it.
You can just like visualize, down like a rock, up like a rocket. And you can write paragraphs about what that means. When the arms bend, the power ends. Again, you could write a paragraph about what that means, but you want to condense it down to something that's so easy for them to remember. We're talking about 4 or 5 words at the max. And I think what coaches tend to do, and this is a study on human nature, but I feel like a lot of times coaches are the center of attention and you're up there by the whiteboard and you tend to forget sometimes that people are there for a purpose and they're there to move and work out and improve their movement and get better and so forth. But when you're up there talking about this, that, and the other, and you are going on long
soliloquies,
about this, that, and the other, and it's you start to lose. I hate to say it, but you start to lose credibility as a trainer, and it also kind of goes back to me with another post that I did. I've seen this post a few different times. This, the caption I got from this one was actually from Stronghold Mentoring. I think, was it Ray Regano? I've also heard, of course, Will Fleming talk about this. People have talked about if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you don't fully understand it, that sort of thing. But this is the idea, is that understanding is more important than technical lingo. And what I mean by that is when you are describing something to an athlete, specifically a younger or a newer athlete, a more novice athlete, instead of saying, for example, triple extension, just say jump, right? It's the same thing, but you're kind of making it in terms of what they want to understand or how they can understand. So kind of throw away the technical lingo and just speak in their own language. And while doing that, keep your words short. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think some coaches just like to hear themselves talk.
Yeah.
You know, so that could be a problem. And I agree with you. We've talked about it often. Move, Move less. I'm sorry. Talk less. Yeah. Move more.
Yeah.
And I can see it in my classes when I coach. If I'm going, like, they're just like antsy. They're kids. They want to move. And if that's your responsibility, and I always tell developing coaches, you'll be better able to get them moving better while they're moving, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't mean go do thrusters in the corner. I'm going to call out cues. It might mean like down, up, down, go, you know, moving them through the reps, but they're moving the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. I think about complex movements, and I think about something as simple as like a thruster, okay? There's a lot of, I mean, I say it's as simple as a thruster, but there's a symphony of joint movement going on there. But when we say a thruster is a front squat into a push press, and you're like, oh, wait a second, that makes a lot more sense to me. And then you go from just saying it's a front squat into a push press, and then you say, this is what I want to see. And then you shut your mouth, you take that barbell, and you do a front squat into a push press. And you don't talk while you're doing it, because you don't need to talk when you're doing it, because your actions are doing your talkings for you. So it's the same message, but you're using less words. That's what we're trying to communicate here on this episode. I hope that people understand that.
Yeah, and I would say it's hard to assess yourself during a class if you're doing that, but I think it's important that through all the cues that we discuss, and as if coaches are listening and they want to get better, that regularly, maybe not every class, but ask somebody, whether it's your buddy that's a coach, a friend, a box owner, hey, give them a really specific, tangible goal that you're working on, and say, hey, when I cue people during the Metcon portion or during the strength, mark down every time I use more than 4 words, 5 words, you know, and go through that. Let's, how about a little game right now, Carl? Are you down for this?
Yeah, bring it. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
All right. I'm going to name a fault. And then okay. You go back and you give me a cue as short as you can.
Oh, geez. Okay.
All right. So let's say someone's knees are coming in on their air squats.
Okay. Wait, I'm sorry. So we're talking about these are visual cues, right?
Well, they're going to have to be verbal cues. I don't want you to demonstrate that our podcast. That'll get lost on the listeners.
So it can't be like a tactical cue, me describing a tactical cue. You want me to use words, right?
Let's do this in verbal. But yeah, I mean, yes, you could give a tactile cue in that moment. But this is a word. This is a verbal cue challenge. And this would be great for box owners to do, right? Or coaches to do. Okay, so we're doing air squats and their knees are in.
Foot tent. Make a foot tent. And what I mean by that is when you go to make a foot tent, you could say knees out, obviously, right? But
that's what I would have went with. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And knees out is great. There's no question about that. But also too, as coaches, we need to like kind of start from the ground up when we're looking at movement. And a lot of times if the feet are going to tell the story. So if you see that foot collapsing, it's likely that the knee is collapsing inward. So you can just say, make a foot tent. So we're making an arch or basically squeezing our feet to the ground like talons, but also knees out too. Anyway,
no, that's the beauty of coaching. There's no wrong answer. I mean, wrong would be yapping about it, but I mean, you say make a foot tent. You know, it's we haven't actually posted this yet, but an upcoming post is what's the best cue?
Yeah, right.
And you know, the answer is the one that works, right? And you say make a foot tent to me, to be quite honest, I'd be like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah,
but there's probably plenty of people that'd be like, oh, that was great, Carl. All right, challenge me.
Challenge you. Okay. How about this? How about this? Your hips are rising too early on your deadlift.
Ooh, great one. I would say lift your chest faster.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah. And I think that is a common way that I've seen in CrossFit level ones, how they address that issue. Makes sense.
And again, could show them, you could, you know, you've drawn this picture of, you know, avoid this stripper booty, which by the way, I don't recommend using those words in your box.
I'm right there with you too. I hesitated so much on actually drawing that one because I was like, this is getting kind of risque here on Whiteboard Daily. But
true story.
Yeah.
I had a coach yelling at a woman, that's a stripper booty. She was a stripper.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, ironically, you just, there's Nicole Carroll says this a lot when we talk about lecturing, and if you're going to use a curse word, she always says, just make sure the risk is worth the reward.
Oh, that, yeah, that's good.
And it's rarely worth the reward.
Yeah, rarely it is. Yeah, so you might as well just kind of play it safe and speak to a broad audience.
Yeah, I mean, it really changed. Not that I was someone dropping F-bombs, but mm-hmm. I definitely am more aware of my language because of it.
Yeah,
100%. All right, let me give you another one.
Bring it.
Someone is dipping too low in their push press.
Ooh, okay. Oh, dipping too low in push press. I like that. It's got to be something about speed. Oh, well, I could say down like a rock, up like a rocket, but I'm talking dipping too low. Man, I don't.
Come on. Did I stump the artist? You got this.
I don't think I've ever dipping too low.
Well, think about, you know, what I think about if someone dips too low is in the push press is the next thing that's going to happen is their chest is going to go forward, right?
True, yeah.
So you could address that, but I would, you know, you could give them a target if you were doing a tactile cue, like hold a piece of PVC and say, as soon as you feel my PVC,
yeah,
go back up. But you might just, I mean, what's wrong with just saying something like, Don't dip so low, right?
You got to remember that cue. No, that's perfect. I think my error on the push press is that I don't feel a change. I feel like if I dip slower and then hit it hard, extend for me, I feel like that works better. I don't work so like the, I guess I need to improve my push press and push jerk
position. Well, I think a lot of newer athletes when they're push pressing, because as it gets heavier, they actually try to go lower.
Yeah.
When as it gets heavier, you need to stay vertical. Because if you go just, you know, for the listeners, try to envision this or even move with me. If you're standing upright and you're thinking push press, and you at some point, your flexibility is going to be limited. And as you try to go too low, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You're going to send your butt back. You're basically doing a partial thruster at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I think dip drive might be a good one.
That's a great one. Yeah, there's, like we've said, there's no wrong answer. All right, give me a really hard one.
A really hard one. How about this? Well, no, that's a pretty easy one. How about this? Your elbows are flaring out too much on your push-up.
Ooh, I mean, you know, and this kind of goes to the coaches, like,
yeah.
What do you think? Short, specific, and actionable?
Yeah.
Carl just nailed it. He said, your elbows are flailing out. Okay. So what body part are we thinking about when we think specific? Elbows.
Right.
They're flailing out. Hey, elbows in. Hey, squeeze those oranges. You know, reminiscent to your deadlift drawing where we're talking about, you know, armpits in. Tactile, I would maybe put my hands inside their arms and say, hey, touch my hands.
Yeah, okay.
You need to be standing above them or only on one side.
Yeah, I kind of like brush the armpit. Brush the rib cage.
Brush the rib cage, exactly. I mean, that's what's cool about it, but I think it's important for the listeners. When you think short, specific, actionable, I want them to envision what's out of place, right? So elbows are out of place. Or if they're dipping too low, their hips are out of place. Or if their knees are going in, their knees are out of place. So, okay, what's out of place? And give them a direction that body part.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of goes back, I don't know, and this is something I want to revisit too, is triaging. Because many times coaches, when we get that new athlete, and their movement is just a train wreck, and you want to like help them with everything at the same time, and the poor person is just like, you know that you're going to overwhelm them with way too many cues, way too many suggestions or feedback, and you got to start from the top down, and you kind of think about safety and then go into the specifics of like how you can improve it. But you got to start off with like the big things first, and in order to start off with the big things first, you need to do exactly what you just said. Find one thing that's out of place and give them a direction as to where to put it. And then you work from there. And then you see, is it same, better, worse? And you do it, then you adjust, same, better, worse, and so forth. So yeah, right on the money there.
Right, and I think if you're thinking of the triage concept, to add another layer to that, you want to consider A, low-hanging fruit, like what can I fix quickly, but yeah. B, also what problem, if I fix, will help the most other problems.
Right, yeah. And that's why feet is such a great way to start. Yeah.
I was just thinking about the air squat, and I would say, hey, someone's on their toes, their knees are coming in, and their back is rounded. Yeah. If I get you back on your heels, most likely I can get your knees out quicker and your chest up. But mm-hmm. if someone's on their toes, their knees are in, and their back is rounded, if you say chest up, they may be able to fix it,
yeah,
but they may not. So you want to think, what problem? It's kind of like that question that like life coaches ask, like what problem can we solve that gives you the best results for your entire life?
Yeah.
And that's really what triage is, right? We're going to fix the worst things first that help the most other things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What areas, especially with younger coaches, I don't know, along with, because I've worked with a lot of young coaches. The number one thing that I feel like is confidence and helping a coach understand that they have to have confidence in what they're teaching and coaching. Once you get that past that, trying to understand, everyone's got their own teaching style. What is one of the biggest errors, or not errors, what's one of the biggest areas that you feel like coaches need to develop when it comes to becoming a better coach?
I certainly think confidence is a factor. Yeah. And I would say, really what we've been talking about is one of the biggest things. It's like you get back from your level one, or you've learned something and you just have this like verbal diarrhea, and maybe in conjunction with the lack of confidence, you're like, I need to show you how smart I am.
Yes.
And you said it earlier, to me, the smarter you are, the more educated, the more you know, the more simple you can make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think Albert Einstein said something like that. You know, the more you know something, the easier it is to explain to a 5-year-old or a kindergartner. Yeah. And everything we just described, notice nothing that we said during all of those cues used anatomy, used jargon, you know, used the points of performance even. You know, we didn't say active shoulders. We didn't say midline stabilization. No. It was simple. And I always think to myself, you know, my mom doesn't understand this stuff. And I think, hey, if I said this to my mom, would she get it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or a young kid. I mean, kids might grasp it better than my mom, to be honest. But make and one thing I've learned over the years is people have a much better understanding of where their butt is in space than most other body parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're like, show me your armpits, you'll get all sorts of crazy reactions.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like, squeeze your butt, mm-hmm. like, I could do that.
Yeah, right.
You know, they understand where their booty is.
Yeah. So two coaches that have greatly influenced my understanding of this sport, I think about Mike Bergner, of course, Coach B, and he is able to make things super simple. And one of the things that he's kind of known for, there's many, many cues that he's known for, but one is describing the clean or the snatch as being just a jump and a land. And when you understand what he's talking about there, of course the bar is moving during that time, but you start to understand, okay, that's really the meat and potatoes of what we're talking about here. It's just a jump and a land. Now there's gonna be crazy nuances that happen, but we're not gonna worry about those right now. We're just gonna focus on the main overall movements of what your body does during this sequence. Another coach that's been greatly influenced by is Greg Everett with Catalyst Athletics. And if you go to his YouTube channel, there's I've grabbed so much content from him because he is no nonsense, just no fluff. You even listen to the commentary that he provides in his YouTube videos, and there's no wasted words. He explains it just as it should be. So Greg Everett, check out Greg Everett's Catalyst Athletics. I'm sure many of the followers will probably follow him on Instagram, but do yourself a favor, especially if you're into Olympic weightlifting, go to his YouTube page and just click on a few different of his videos, his tutorial, not tutorials, but instructional videos, and you will learn how to speak as a good coach. I promise you that. You'll pick up something.
Well, and do you know Coach B's background?
He's a PE teacher.
Right. So yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I've heard him talk about it where he's like, you know, I'm trying to convince, and I think he talks about one student in particular, some young girl who was like, do you mean just jump?
Yeah, right.
And he was like, oh yeah, you know? And I see coaches regularly. It's like, you forget. It does not have to be complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also, you mentioned a really great point about this verbal diarrhea and coaches who come back from their CrossFit level one and they've learned so much, not just from the level one itself, but just like in their young career, and they want to prove themselves to their client or the class or whatever. And so they go to spout off a lot of technical lingo. And in turn, what happens is that you get a long drawn out explanation of something that should be very simple. And I think that goes to, it plays in the same hand as confidence. And when you are confident about what you're speaking, you don't have to talk too much. You don't have to use too many words. You have to explain briefly what it is, show them what it is. And then down the road, if you want to get into the nuances of how to perfect a movement, which with CrossFit you're always doing when we're striving for virtuosity, but there's a time and place for everything. And the time for just introducing things is that same message, less words technique, where just find exactly what you want to say, say it, and then move on. So.
Yeah. And I think going back to your newer coach question, it's important for them to gain the confidence to remember you've just taken your level one. I assume you have so much more knowledge now. Even if someone's been in your box for a year, 2 years, 3 years longer than you, and you're newer to CrossFit, after your level one, you have gained such a different perspective and so much more of an education. You've passed this test. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that. Don't forget how more you know. And that was a struggle for me when I was newer, especially, you know, in 2007 when I opened, I was the only one that knew CrossFit. And then 2009, 10, 11, people were new, but they were coming in, and I should say, and I was the fittest at the box, like, because mm-hmm. I was just doing it longer. Mm-hmm. But when newer members came in that were fitter than me, I was intimidated. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why is this guy going to listen to me? He's got a better Fran time. He can snatch more, et cetera.
Yeah,
and it's important to remember that isn't what's important. You know, you could be a terrible athlete and a phenomenal coach. And, you know, I don't follow football, but I'm sure you can name someone who's the best coach out there.
Well, Bill Belichick comes to mind, right?
And was he a good football player?
Was he? I assume he probably did play for a little bit, but in his current physical state, I don't think that he would be making sacks and catching touchdowns.
But even then, you're like, in his current, yeah, sure. Yeah. But I mean, if he were that good, most people would recognize him. Like, if Michael Jordan came back to coach, you'd be like, that dude was one of the best. Now he's coaching, right? But some of the best coaches, and even look at Tia, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shane's her coach. Granted, it's her husband, but no one talks about how good of an athlete Shane. I don't even know.
Oh, Shane? No, yeah. I mean, I assume
he may be phenomenal, but it's not the first thing you think of.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that a lot of these young coaches, they feel like they, to a certain extent, I do believe, if you are teaching a movement, it's good to demonstrate it, but also like muscle-ups, for example. I remember being a young coach and muscle-ups were on the agenda for the workout. And I was running through all the different movements of the WOD, and muscle-ups were one of them. And I had to just like gear myself up to be like, okay, everyone gather around. I'm going to do a muscle-up in front of the whole class, and I'm not even that warmed up, but here it goes. And, you know, if you have to understand the demographic, you have to understand the class and how many people are actually going to be doing muscle-ups for the workout. And if they are, then you can talk to them later or whatever. But there's a million other different scales that you should be focusing on rather than something like that. And again, you know, we talk about Glassman quite often, and, you know, Glassman's not doing any muscle-ups, but he can, you know, we've seen him coach athletes through that movement quite often. This is what I want to get. I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot right now, but
you're doing the opposite of our post.
I know. I knew I said I was going to do this. I said that we were both going to do this. is, check this out. This is a massive massive coaching technique that I want coaches to understand that they have the capability of doing and taking advantage of. Usually in your class, you're going to have a standout superstar athlete. And that athlete is going to be hopefully one that has a high integrity of movement. And they can demonstrate what you're talking about really well. There's no sense in you having to run through everything along with talking about everything and demonstrating everything if you can just use someone else to demonstrate the movement while you're talking, you're talking it through to the class. Use other athletes as a coaching tool for yourself, just like you would use a whiteboard, just as you would use a PVC pipe. You're likely going to have a great athlete that can demonstrate something and provide the class a visual while you're talking. Okay, I'm going to pass it off to you because I just talked.
Can I add one layer to that? I would just say this because I agree with you, but it's backfired. Yeah, if you're going to do that, watch your athlete move first.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Because they might be able to do muscle ups, but maybe they can't demonstrate full lockout or et cetera. But yeah, there's no shame in that. I mean, there's been plenty of times like I've got a coach tonight and I'm really sore.
Yeah.
And if I have to, I just got called in to sub, so I haven't even looked at the workout yet. But if it has anything to do with my core, I'm going to be useless. So, you know, I'm going to, if there's toes to bar or something like that, I'm going to be like, hey, buddy, can you demonstrate it? But I might ask them to do it first, or maybe it's someone that I see in class regularly. Right. And I think, and sometimes you can just explain things better when someone else is doing, hey, notice this position of their arms, you know, notice this position with their feet, et cetera.
Also, too, I think that it provides the class with a different opportunity to see someone like them demonstrate movement. That's not, okay, yeah, you can do this because you're a coach and you, you know, train a lot more than I do. But if they see Joe Smith that they're in class with every single day demonstrating a movement that they're going to be doing, oh, okay, I see how they're supposed to move. Now, their torso moves vertically. I can see how my torso needs to move vertically now. Okay, that makes sense to me. So,
and it's motivating, right? Like I want to, sometimes your members are like, I can never move like Carl. He's the coach and he's so fit, but I can move like Johnny. Like that's a realistic goal for me to attain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's really identifying the tools at your disposal as a coach and realizing that you don't have to use your mouth so much. And when you do use your mouth, use it less. There's another great post too that goes.
That's a great life lesson, by the way. Somebody, you know, they say, you know, we have two ears and one mouth for a reason.
That's what
you just say that. You really look at us. Look at us. It only took 11 episodes, but we're finishing each other's.
Oh, sandwiches.
Exactly.
No, you're spot on there. You have two ears and one mouth, and you need to use them proportionately. So listen twice as much as what you talk.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this about me, but I meditate daily for about 20 minutes.
Awesome.
And that's the 20 minutes you can't get in touch with me if you're reaching out to me. And that's something that's really helped me. It just makes me pause when people are talking. It makes me just listen to them and, you know, makes you want to be more respectful, have more empathy. And I think that's the mark of a good coach. I don't think you need to meditate to achieve that, but everything we're saying is true. And think about it also. You talk all day as a coach. Many of your members don't have that. You know, I like to say, like, they go to jobs they don't enjoy. They're in relationships with people they're no longer in love with. Their kids are driving them crazy. You know, think about it, all the stresses we have. And sometimes just listening is the best thing you can do.
So, hey, real quick, before we move on here, just for the listeners and also for myself, take us through in that 20 minutes that you're meditating. Richard, real quick, A, what are you thinking about? And B, how do you feel when you're done?
So, I mean, the truth is, if you're meditating, you shouldn't be thinking about anything, right? Okay, so right. I don't think I told you, but it'll be 2 weeks ago Sunday, I took a transcendental meditation course, TM.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's what Jerry Seinfeld does, Howard Stern, the Beatles did it, et cetera. And transcendental meditation is supposed to be twice a day for 20 minutes. I always get my once in a day. I don't always get my second. That's a goal I'm working towards. And you have a mantra. You're not supposed to share your mantra, but you have a mantra and you're thinking about what that mantra is. And And the goal is just by using that mantra, you can transcend, right? You can dive deep. And why I really love transcendental meditation is I've tried to meditate for years and it's like, yeah, what are you thinking of? What are you trying to do? And it's like transcendental meditation is if something comes, it's supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of like, it's okay. That's fine.
I assume you acknowledge it and
you try to always go back to the mantra, but sometimes you can't. And then they're like, that's okay. Sometimes you're restless. Sometimes you fidget. Sometimes you like, I've had all of the experiences in the last, you know, 10 to 12 days since doing it. But I will say when I'm done, I feel better and I have more patience and I listen better.
Yeah.
So I would check it out.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. And I like it because it's a great, I think it still fits very much on topic with what we are discussing right now. Same message, less words. And I think that that's something we can apply to our life, right? Try to be more direct with what you're saying and use less words, but also just listen more and talk less. So I love this message. I'm glad that we're talking about it. I'm glad we discussed it today.
Yeah. And like I said to the listeners, I highly recommend you check it out. You have to find a TM teacher in your area. And right now with everything going on, there's one one-on-one face-to-face, which I did at this amazing couple's house. They're like 70 years old.
Oh, very complete, cool.
Exactly what you would think of people that have been meditating for 50 years. And, you know, then there's a course that you get on your phone. So it was really great. And I'm loving it. Check it out. All right. Same message, less words. I really enjoy talking about that. What, you want to take us out, Carl?
I will take us out. First off, I want to thank you, Jason, for sitting down with me again. Another great week has gone by and another great discussion that we've had today. I want to thank the listeners so much. You guys have just, I don't know, Jay, what's one word that you would describe how you feel with the way the podcast is going right now?
Grateful.
Grateful. Yeah, that's perfect. I'm extremely grateful for those of you who take time out of your day, whether it's in a commute or walking around, or maybe it's over the speakers in your gym when you're cleaning or whatever. I don't know. Thank you so much for listening. We are extremely grateful. And I promise you, we'll continue to bring the good stuff each week. Be prepared to tune in next week when we cover another great cue. And until then, keep rising those tides because a high tide lifts all boats. So we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks again for listening to today's episode of Whiteboard Weekly. On behalf of Carl and myself, Jason Ackerman, we really appreciate the download. We really appreciate you sharing our episodes with friends, families, your box owner, your buddies at the gym, anyone that's willing to listen to us talk about all things CrossFit, all things coaching, and all things coaches development. We do this because we have an absolute love and passion for it. And we hope that you can tell that through our talking and through each episode. If you haven't already, please feel free to leave us a review on any podcast platform. It goes a long way in helping us spread the word. Once again, thanks again for listening.